So what does exceeding mean? It means more than. And that's such a great word. Exceeding the speed limit. That could be 55 miles an hour over the speed limit, or 1 mile an hour over the speed limit. So it's all relating to what it's, to, you know, to the word it's modifying. So what does it mean for something to be exceeding, to exceed more than could possibly ever, under any circumstances, be used up? It means more than that. So what's God able to do? Sorry, your brain will fry if you tried to figure that out, because more than could ever possibly ever come up against him, he has more than enough ability to handle that. Do you believe that? Well, sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. It's still true. Exceeding abundantly, immeasurably more. Limitless, basically. Same phrase that's used back up in a few verses when it talks about his love. Do you ever feel like when you look at the heavenly tank of love? The heavenly tank of love. When you look at the heavenly tank of love, do you ever feel like the needle must be on empty? Because what a naughty person you were this week. See, you got that confused with human love, because God has a limitless supply. If God ever came to the end of his love, he would cease to exist, because it's who he is. It's interwoven into who he is. He doesn't have more love 1 minute than he has another minute. He's pedal to the metal, full blast, constantly. It's his being. So as limitless as is his love, so is his ability. So to him who's able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine. And I just love the the amplification of this in the Amplified Bible. Infinitely above our highest prayers, desires, thoughts, hopes, or dreams. Wow. The issue is not really, can I dream bigger than God's able to do? The issue is my will as good as his will? Because often when God comes up with something and I come up with something and I pray and he says no, it's never because it's too hard for him. It's never because it's too good for me. It's always because it's not good enough for me. Because he has something higher. I think often we limit God just in what we ask. This is why I love the prayers of five-year-olds. If they really know Jesus, if they really believe in God, they're not hung up about praying about stuff like adults are. I love to tell the story of my brother's twin daughters when they were 5 years old. They're 40 now. When they were 5 years old, the belt came off, or something similar came off in the washing machine in their house, and there was a pile of laundry. There were four kids in the house. And so Annie, my brother's wife, called him at the office, Pastor Greg, called him and said, the washing machine's not working, and when can you come home and fix it, because I've got a room full of laundry. And so while my brother is hanging up and saying, oh, man, I should have fixed that, while he's getting in his Volvo to drive home, the five-year-old twins walked in the laundry room and laid hands on the washing machine and prayed that God would fix it. Isn't that cute? My brother didn't pray that God would fix the washing machine. Why? No, this is a really good question, because he talked to me about it later. He says, you know why I didn't pray for it? Because I knew what was wrong. I thought, I have to fix it because I know what's wrong. The twins didn't know anything about that. When they came up against a problem, they just automatically asked Jesus. Isn't that cute? Folks, that's faith. It's the kind of faith that a lot of adults don't have because we know too much. Somebody says, why aren't you trusting God for this? And you go, yeah, I know he can't, but you know, this is just, I can't ask God to do this. I got to do this myself. And I want to say, why? I think the smart thing to do is be a five-year-old, ask God to do it, and then have God say, well, no, there, honey. It needs a new belt. You know, go to the store and buy it. But ask God first. Believe that God can do it first. But the problem, our asking is really reveals our true view of God, doesn't it? I wrote down four things I've heard you say. And I'm not going to look at anybody in particular, but I've heard all of you say these things about praying. Well, I am going to reveal Sue because she did herself. When we don't ask God to do something, four reasons why we don't ask. Number one, we don't think he would be interested. Right? The art sale. Oh, I can't pray about that. It's an art sale. God wouldn't be interested. And I wanted, and God's going, did I say I wouldn't be interested? So, hey, and I'm pointing you out because you gave that testimony. I've done the very same thing. And where God has had to get me to ask him, come on, Bob. Don't take no for an answer if you haven't even asked me. So, we don't think he'd be interested. Here's the one that I've heard more of you say than any other thing. I'm not important enough. Oh, God would do that for somebody else. But, you know, I've been a naughty girl this week. Or I've been a naughty boy this week. Or I have faith issues. So God, I'm really not important enough. The other two things fall into exactly polar extreme opposite categories. We don't ask God to do something because we think it's too big, which is silly. Or we don't ask him to do something because we think it's too small. Five things. I just thought of one. I've heard people say, I can't ask God to do that because maybe it's not his will. Follow the logic of that. You're not asking him to do something in case it's not his will. Wouldn't the smart thing to do be to ask him to do it until he tells you it's not his will? Really? Isn't that logical? He's done that for me. You know what? If I'm asking him to do something that's not his will, he'll let me know. But to just not ask, to not imagine God being able to do that because I'm afraid that perhaps it's not his will. Again, five-year-olds don't worry about stuff like that. They just ask. Lord, help us. Here's a statement I wrote down. I wish I could quote the very first person and give them credit for the very person that said this, but it changed my life. They said, Bob, God will be as involved in your life as you allow him to be. He isn't going to hijack the bus and seize the helm if you insist on driving. He isn't going to move in and take over your finances if you insist on doing it yourself. I believe, unless he tells you, he's not going to use medical science to do something that you haven't asked him to do. I always like to ask God first, then talk to a doctor. I have had many times when I've said, Lord, I know you can do this, and I've had the Lord say, yeah, I can, and I want you to go see this guy over here because I'm going to use him. You see, the whole issue, though, is the way we ask often reveals our true view of God. We have certain categories of things that we don't even talk to God about. One of those categories is responsibility. Well, I can't ask God about that because that's my responsibility. Who says? Did God say? Did your folks say? Did your spouse say? Why do you think it's your responsibility? I think the safe thing to do is ask God and say, okay, Lord. Charles Stanley wrote something about this a week ago, and I sent it to you. I sent it to a couple of you. He said, whenever we face a problem and the very first thing we say is, what am I going to do? He said, we've already started down the wrong fork in the road. He said, the first thing we should say is, what are you going to do, Lord? And then wait for God to give you instructions. He might want you to do something. Often he does. But you see, it may seem like a little deal, but we develop a lifetime, a habit of answering it ourselves first rather than going to him. So he's able to do immeasurably more than all we can ask or even imagine. So you're not going to ask something that's too big, but often what we even ask for. I told you I have my subjects. I'm embarrassed to even tell you what they are. They seem so silly now because I know him so much better and I believe I trust him more than I did. And the answer is I don't worry the way I used to. It's proof to me. But one of my subjects was people. Isn't that silly? Boy, I'm in the wrong business, aren't I? If I don't believe God is able to change people, go do something else, Bob. What a pointless exercise this would be. But I don't know what it is. I didn't even believe that God really could change me. That's why I love that lyric of that song that we sang. The very last thing of all the things God's able, more than able to do, it says he's able to make me what he wants me to be. I believe that with all my heart. I didn't always believe that. I just thought, well, I'll never grow past a certain point because I'm just weird. One of the things that's wonderful about being filled in a church filled with losers, pastored by a loser, is normal people who are trying to trust God to change us, is that this is the great value about that women's day that you guys had when everybody's looking around and going, wow, we're just normal people. We've got horrible self-images. We've made mistakes. We've got, you know, not hope like a river. We've got hope like a squirt gun in our best day, but certainly not a rushing river. And we're all sitting there saying, but you know what? We have a big God who's filled with love, who's not impatient, who finishes what he starts. I love the fact that the Amplified Bible puts the next statement at the beginning. And like I said, it wasn't until just a few years ago that I ever, ever understood why it's included. I always got to the God's able to do exceeding above blah, blah, blah part and then whizzed right through the rest of the verse. But, there, you know, knowledge and understand, especially understanding, often comes from asking questions. George MacDonald, my favorite Scottish author from the Victorian era, said that questions are door handles. Isn't that great? I open up that door to that room. I wonder what's in there. And God says, ask me. Don't be afraid to walk in and look around, but the question itself is door handle. So here's the question. If God has limitless love, which right here it says he does, if he has limitless ability, which right here it says he does, why do I still have needs? I think that the answer to that question is right here. Put on your thinking caps, because as my third grade teacher, Mrs. Hickerson, used to say, because it involves syntax and grammar and verb tenses. And I didn't used to study that. And that's one of the reasons I missed this. The key word, those of you who have been here for a long time know that there are certain key words that when you see this phrase or key phrases, you should put the brakes on because it's telling you something. One of the key phrases is the phrase, so that. because it's a connective word. When you see the phrase so that, that tells you you're about to be given the reason for something that was just stated. The purpose. Another key phrase is found right here at the beginning of this part of the sentence, and it's the words according to. Interesting how I missed that for years, but I never looked at the according to's. But it's another one of those things where linguistically you're about to be told the measure of something. You're about to be told the size pipe that the blessing's going to come through. We saw earlier, be filled according to the measure of the fullness of God. Why settle for being half full? If God says, hey, your pipe's too small, buddy, let's just get a really, really big one because I'm going to just flood that. I'm going to flood you with as much as you allow me to. This phrase, according to, means measured by or in consequence of. It's a very fat little preposition in Greek. I think it's one of the most important overlooked phrases in all of the Bible. Because it's there for a reason. It means something. My God shall supply your needs according to. How much money you have in the bank? How much money you earn? Whether or not you have a job? No, Paul said, my God shall supply your needs according to, measured by his riches. In his glorious riches in Christ Jesus. According to, measured by, the Amplified Bible says, in consequence of. It's a causal phrase. Here's the, just so you can check me out this on this, I know some of you do. It's good, I'm learning a lot. According to his power at work, or his power that is working in us. That's the faucet. That's the qualifier for the promise. Last week I gave you a little teaser. I just dropped that little bomb and I said, here's something for you to ponder for a whole week. The limitless God with limitless love is limited by one thing in my life. And this is it right here. According to, measured by, the ability of God to do exceeding abundantly above all I could ask or think, it comes to me according to his power that is working in me. The verb is working as a present participle. It's in a mixed voice. It's in passive / middle voice. Middle voice means that the subject of the sentence in some way is acting upon themselves. Passive means that someone else is doing the action. So when you combine a passive and a middle voice, you're saying that you are allowing someone to do the action. Okay? You with me? I know you never thought you were ever going to have to diagram a sentence once you got out of the sixth grade, but this is important because what this is saying, if you follow the correct syntax of this statement, it's saying that the doing, that God is able to do, the working in me, the doing for me, is dependent upon my allowing him to work in me. The only thing that limits the limitless God is my allowing him to work. Can it be that simple? Often it is. Now, what I wasn't going to say last week, which is why God gave me another whole week to study, I wrote down four things. What does it look like to limit the working of God? Since we know that limiting the limitless God simply means I'm not allowing him to do something. I gave you a couple of scriptures last week. I'll give them to you again today. just a few key ones, because there's lots of them, more than you would think. But I wrote four things. Limiting God's working in my life, what does that look like? There are not in any particular order. The first thing on my list is that I'm fighting him. The opposite of fighting him is yielding to him. I know this is true of God changing me. You know how some people have habits that are so precious that they would rather die than give them up? And I'm not talking about addictions, although the same principle is true. Some people, worrying is a habit that they would rather die than give up because worrying feels responsible. And you look at people that don't worry and you think, you are so irresponsible. Didn't Jesus say, which of you by worrying can add a cubit to your height or a day to your life? It's silly. It doesn't accomplish anything. But it feels like it's accomplishing something. It feels like I'm being responsible. But you know what? You're not. You're killing yourself. And to the degree that I'm worrying about stuff, I'm fighting him. I'm fighting the thing that he's continually saying to me. How many times has he said to you, let go? How many times has he said to you, stop fighting me. Just yield to me. Come to me and I'll give you rest, he says. That's just too easy. I would rather just work harder. Good luck with that. Because that'll kill you too. So one of the ways I limit God is I fight him. He's trying to set me free by prying my stiff little fingers off the steering wheel and I just refuse to let go. I'm terrified what'll happen if I let go. But see, that's how you have to find out whether God's a liar or not. Second thing I wrote on the list of what limiting God looks like, and this was me, this is some of you, this is somebody you know, we limit what God's able to do simply because we do it ourselves. We answer our own prayers. I have a sister, she's way better at this now, but there was a time in her life where she was so mad at God, she was spitting mad. It all centered around the whole sibling thing. It was, Bobby, I'm a Christian, you're a Christian. In fact, I'm a better Christian than you. But God just does all these things for you. It's not fair. He doesn't do things for me. And I said, sweetie, and I said her name, and if you're my sister and you're listening, it's not you. You know who you are. I said, the only difference between you and me, and yes, you probably are a better Christian in many ways than I am. The difference between you and me, why God does things for me and he doesn't do them for you, is that you answer your own prayers. You don't know what God could do because you do it. And even if you do the same thing that God was going to do, you didn't get to see God do it, so you believe he doesn't do it. Me, I'm just a big enough doofus that I let God do it. You know who has a problem with this more than any other thing is responsible people. I prided myself in how responsible. I'm a detail guy. And those are noble qualities, but you know what? When you start trying to be God, you're ripping yourself off.